Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the BRLC CLUA Luncheon. This is Judy Wilkinson, president of the California Library Users. I like to say Kalua, and I am now going to hand the microphone over to my co-chair for this luncheon event, Linda Perrell.
Where are you, Linda?
There you go.
Thank you, Judy. It's a pleasure to be here with everyone. You know, these organizations just really belong together. There's no doubt about it. We have so many overlapping interests and concerns. So it's such a pleasure to have our special guests here today, two very dear friends of mine as well. And Judy will introduce them. But welcome back, BRLC members who might have drifted away. We hope you'll consider joining CLUA. And CLUA members who are here, and if you read Braille and aren't in BRLC, shame on you. So we're going to enjoy a nice lunch. And
yeah. So I just wanted to tell you that BRLC is looking for members, as is CLUA. So our two treasurers are here at this meal. No, that's going to be hard for Mike, isn't it? Oh, okay. Vita, are you in the room? Not yet. We are privileged and honored to have Kim Charlson with us today and Brian Charlson. But Brian is going to get to... Oh, let's have a hand. But Brian gets top billing today because, of course, he is president of what?
Lua.
And we are delighted to turn the mic over to Brian while you enjoy your dessert. Let's try to keep the noise to a low roar. And we'll get you out of here pretty early. But Brian has the next 15 minutes of our rapt attention.
Here you go, Brian.
Got it.
Great. That's good. I like that, too.
That's a very good lunch. I enjoyed my salad. Are you enjoying your meal? I think it's a pretty darn good salad. And, you know, salads and I don't usually agree, but today I got to eat the whole thing. That was great. I want to tell you a little bit of a personal story. And those who have heard me speak before, you know, that's where I do my best, is when I stick with things that are personal rather than overly bureaucratic and those kinds of things. So I want you to think back and ask yourself, is that better?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I have just been risen to a new audio level. So I want to tell you a story, and it's...
I think turn the other way a little bit. There are more people behind you than in the room.
No, I'm facing the bulk of them. There's a couple of people behind me.
Sorry.
Say hello. Hey, there's just a couple of people back there, and they'll forgive me, won't you?
Okay. Sure, don't
there you
me.
So back in 1967, many of us... Think back that far?
Yeah.
Back in 1967, on July 7th of that year, I snuck into my mother's kitchen. I have two brothers, two sisters. They were out causing trouble in the neighborhood somewhere. But my mother was off bowling with her best friend. And my father was next door mowing my grandmother's lawn. It's one of those multi-generational kind of things going on. And while they were gone, I snuck into my mother's kitchen, crawled up onto the kitchen counter, and pulled down a box of Arm & Hammer baking soda. And from another cupboard, I pulled out a bottle of white distilled vinegar. And from the trash can, I retrieved it's the large family size. There was a brand name of Micron. Mouthwash back when I was a kid.
Oh my God.
Do you remember Micron mouthwash?
Oh boy.
And it came in kind of a flat flask-like bottle, and I unscrewed that, and I put in baking soda and vinegar and screwed the cap on, ran to the back door, opened the back door to throw this wonderful bomb I had just created into the backyard where the blackberry bushes lived. Unfortunately, it blew up in my hand. And at that moment, I became a blind person. You don't normally get to hear how somebody lost their vision, but you just heard about how I lost my vision. Now, it exploded, and luckily the glass missed me entirely, because those were in the days of glass bottles, right? The glass missed me. The cap was found not in the neighbor's yard, but in the neighbor's neighbor's yard. So that was quite the little bomb I created. And shortly thereafter, I passed out, and I woke up a day and a half later in the hospital. And with, you know, those, do you remember those tea strainers? If anybody's had eye surgery where you had those, these little tea strainer things they taped over your eyes while you were recovering from surgery? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I woke up with that and in a hospital for the first time, separated from my brothers and sisters. No kids were allowed in hospitals unless you were the kid in the bed. And already on the table, next to my hospital bed, I already had my first piece of blindness technology. Can you guess what it was? A talking book machine.
Oh, my goodness.
A talking book machine. I had been blind in my mind for just moments, and books were already part of my life. It just so happened that that day, the woman that my mother was bowling with, and who got beat by my mother, who beat my mother, rather, every week in the league, was Jenny. And Jenny was totally blind.
My goodness.
So it just happened that her best friend happened to be a blind person. So when her son lost his sight that day, she had Jenny to turn to. And the first thing Jenny said is, "You got to get the boy a talking book machine." And I remember even the first book I read, Onion John, a story about some crazed old guy who used to tie rocks in the trees to try to embarrass the apples to grow bigger. I don't know where the onion came in place in all of this, but nonetheless, Onion John is what it was. And I began my love of reading. Now, prior to that, keep in mind I was 11 years old. Prior to that, I was your classic D-minus student. The only thing I was ever any good at as a child in school was art. I was really good at drawing. Well, that was kind of taking a back seat for a while. So I suddenly found myself with a lot of time on my hands, because when you're injured, the last thing I want you to do is move around much. So it was pretty much 3 weeks in the hospital and then several months playing really quietly. And that became reading books. And it became part of my life not only then, but as with many of you, I bet, there have been times when you had hard times you had to live through. And if it weren't for those books, life would have been a lot harder for you. I remember when my family moved from the house I grew up in to a new neighborhood, and we brought along my books with me. And at this point, understand, you BRL California members, Braille is not something easy to pick up at 11 years old. When you weren't a good student before. So I'm busy listening to War and Peace on those big, slow-playing records and reading Curious George in Braille. So it took a while before Braille became an important part of my life. It had to compete with all those books I could have access to. But yeah, War and Peace was one of the books that I read early on. I remember when we made that move the year after I lost my vision, there was an extra room in the house that the previous owners called a library, and it became my personal sanctuary, and I set up my talking book machine in there and had bookshelves. And, you know, it doesn't take many books in Braille before you fill the library of books. And in those days, before the cassette, even the records took a fair amount of space. And you picking those large books up, they weren't very light either back in the day. But that became an important part of my life. And it turned me from a D-minus student to an A-minus student. I was never going to become an A student, believe me. But I went from D-minus to A-minus. My brothers both insisted it's because I wasn't looking at the pretty girls all the time anymore, and I was spending time learning. But it really had to do with that ability to focus and to listen to the spoken word. It wasn't until I got into college and beyond that Braille became a huge part of what I thought of as reading. And you know the number one reason it worked for me? Refreshable Braille. Anybody who thinks technology is the death knell of Braille, they aren't paying attention. It is the renaissance of Braille. Because now Braille doesn't have to take up your living room. It can be on an SD card. And that is going to, has already, and is going to make great changes in our world. We're not going to have to say, choose audio because it's cheaper. We're going to choose Braille because it's more accurate.
Yes.
So Braille became an important part when I got my first Versa Braille.
Yes.
Remember the Versa Braille?
Oh, yes.
I used to work for the Oregon State Senate back in those days. And in the back of the Senate chambers, they had a couple of phone booths. And I would sit in the phone booth with a Versa Braille on my lap and a 300 baud acoustic coupler modem and call on the phone booth in the back of there and put the two together in order to find out what bills were up that day on the Senate floor. So I learned to read Braille because, quite honestly, speech technology back then wasn't very good. You remember when all the speech synthesizers sounded like drowning Russians? They were really, really bad. So reading has changed as a result of technology, but it has really exploded because of that technology. It hasn't collapsed, it's exploded. But something else happened. When I was taught Braille, I was handed a volume of Braille, and strangely enough, I took the cover and I moved it from right to left, and that exposed page one. And I'd read page one, and then I'd turn the page, and on the back of page one, surprise, was page two. It did not take much learning and teaching to teach me the mechanics of reading something. Now, I read on a number of devices. It doesn't have a play button and a pause button and a fast forward and rewind. It is marked up. So now I have to be able to know how to use this device to navigate through the text I'm listening to. I have a lot more choices of where my material comes from, what format it's maintained in, what devices I use to access it. Kim and I, once a year, do a guest lecture for a library school. They come to Perkins, and she tells them all about the Perkins Library, and I tell them all about tech, and I have all this tech laid out in front of me. And the first part of that exercise is I pull out a print book, and I take a volunteer who didn't know they were a volunteer until they sat down at my left, and I hand them that book, and I said, I want you to move to chapter 3, second page, second paragraph, and read me the first sentence. And they do that. Doesn't take them very long, does it? And I said, all right, now, pick up any one of these devices in front of me and do the same thing. There's a lot more required of you and I to read today than when I was 11 years old. With expanded opportunity comes expanded need to learn. Incidentally, how many of you read books the same way today as you did 5 years ago? And rapidly, that's becoming how many of you are reading the same way today as you did 5 months ago. It keeps changing. I was asked about the Kindle app earlier today. Well, the Kindle app changed 2 weeks ago. And it changed 3 months before that. And it changed 6 months before that. Updates happen. And what I thought was an easy thing for me to do becomes all I had to do is agree to the update, and it doesn't happen that way anymore. Doesn't work anymore. So, I'm delighted because it's keeping me employed. Everything you thought you knew about tech last year, you get to come back to me again to learn this year, differently. It's great, but we have to, as consumers of this wonderful opportunity of accessing the printed word in so many ways, we have to stay on our A game. We have to keep informed what's available. We have to keep ourselves trained in how to access it. And we have to continue to be advocates to make sure that all this change doesn't change it away from us instead of toward us. Most of the change has been for the good. Think of all those e-text books that we now have access to through Bookshare, for example. Technically not doable so many years ago. However, if you're a college student today and you're assigned 12 textbooks for one class, they will say it's available electronically. Are all electronic texts accessible?
No.
What makes the difference? Did you think that when you went to college to get your degree as a social worker, that what you had to also have is a minor in technology to become a student of social work? Yet this is our lives, and we need to be on top of it. And that's why we need organizations like Lua, like Kahlua, like BRL, and like BRLC. We have to be on top of these things. If we don't want to complain about what others have done in our absence, we better be in attendance throughout every opportunity we have. I bet you there's an advisory board to your Library for the Blind. Is there not? I bet you there is advisory boards to all the not-for-profits out there who do things in our name. I bet you they exist. And we need, as consumers of those services, to be actively engaged in each and every one of the decisions they make. Whether the decision is to weed out the Braille collection of anything that's more than 2 years old. A lot of libraries are making those decisions, and they're doing so based on square footage cost. If we don't take the time to be engaged, we may see these things fade away as a result of finance, but almost always as a result of one two-word phrase, benign neglect. Nobody meant to do harm. They just did harm by not thinking it through, or perhaps by not hearing from you. So I thank you all for your attention at lunch. I'm glad that Kim and I were able to come and share this time with you. You'll have opportunities to interact with her and I on the issues that matter to us, and I know matter to each of you. Again, thank you very much for your attention.
Brian would be glad to entertain one or two questions if there are any out there. Anybody have a question? I think people are pretty moved by what you said, so it sounds like there are not any questions. And you ended on a great note. Thank you, Brian. We thank you so much for being with us. And Kim, those of you who were not at our Kahlua meeting didn't hear what she said about Perkins, but Pam and I have decided we want the Perkins Library in California.
Can I say one?
Oh, you know what? We've got a few minutes. You certainly may.
So I can't provide your library services for you, but there are a couple ways that I can make some of our services available to you. Okay. So there's a couple magazines that Perkins produces that you can get directly from us. And once you have an account in our library system, you become an out-of-state patron, and you have some access to some of the things that we provide. So, if you're interested, I can think of two magazines that you could sign up for and that we produce. So, one of them is Perspectives, and Perspectives is a twice-a-year large print, Braille, digital audio, or e-text magazine. It's very good. It's about 100 pages, and it's articles written about things that are going on at Perkins, but from a more broader perspective, like trends and just interesting articles. I think it's a pretty good magazine, and it's not academic, overly academic. It's very readable, very interesting. So if you want to get that magazine, you would contact me, and we would put you in our system. The other magazine is called Your Dog. So for the guide dog users, Your Dog is available in digital cartridge audio or Braille, hard copy Braille. We produce it and send it out to people all over the country, actually. It's Tufts University School of Veterinary Medicine, and it's a small magazine, so it's not, it's about, I don't know, like 50 Braille pages a month. It's got, you know, news articles, nutrition, research, trends, all kinds of things for dogs. So the dog people can sign up for that. And then you're kind of, you got your foot in the door at the Perkins Library. So who knows what else could benefit you. That's right. So again, I gave my email, and I'll say it, and lots of people know how to reach me. It's kim.charlson@perkins.org. And if you're interested, you know, send me your name, address, format preference, phone number, and I'll work with you to get you signed up and into the Perkins Library, okay? Thanks.
Thanks so much. Linda?
Is she still, Linda, are you there?
I'm going to say farewell from Judy Wilkinson and hand it over to my colleague, Linda, for her farewell to you.
Yeah, don't forget paying dues. Our treasurer is not here at the moment. Mike Keith.
No, Kalua's treasurer.
Kalua's treasurer is here.
Let me.
Yeah, but BRLC's treasurer is not here. But we welcome your donations. Mike Keithley is our newly elected treasurer. He's if you can collar him anytime during the weekend, that would be great. Otherwise, we are going to start a recruitment campaign to rebuild our membership. So you will be hearing from us. You know, I'm listening to Kim talk about the library and people signing up to be part of their library. Of course, for most of my life, as a kid in Maine and an adult in the Boston area, I was a member of that library, a participant. And my Newsline number is still the one that I got at Perkins when Newsline first came up. So my heart is still there with all those folks as well.
Thank you.
What a wonderful opportunity to talk to these two great folks, and enjoy the rest of your day.
No, I just want to add, though, Vita is back, the Kalua treasurer. Now, everybody in the room reads books. Didn't you just admit it? Who doesn't read books in here? Who doesn't read books? Every one of you needs to join the California Library Users, and Vita is back at the table, ready to take your dues of $20, and we'd love to have you as members. Thank you, and enjoy the afternoon session.